From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. As we've been talking about on the program these past few days, the big news out of Washington has been the government shutdown that almost seemed inevitable and then, at the last second, did not come to pass. But there was another piece of legislation, a major piece of legislation, that did expire over the weekend, the U.S. Farm Bill. It's a measure Congress passes roughly every 5 years. It says it sets policies and funding for food, farm, and conservation programs, and it also funds the SNAP program, Supplemental Nutrition Assistance, formerly known as food stamps. Divisions among Republicans and Democrats on what to include in the next version of the Farm Bill could take months to resolve. What are the holdups? What happens in the meantime? And what will all of this mean for farmers? To help us answer these questions, we're joined now by Jonathan Capes. He's an associate professor in agricultural and consumer economics at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, also director of the Gardner Agriculture Policy Program. Jonathan, welcome to the 21st Show.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Steve Bridge is also with us. He's the Agriculture Business Director for WFMB, AM and FM in Springfield. Steve, welcome back to the show to you.
Great to be here, Brian.
And Adam Nielsen is Director of National Legislation and Policy Development with the Illinois Farm Bureau. Adam, thank you for joining us as well.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
Listeners, we'd like to invite you to join our conversation, as ever, by giving us a call at 800-222-9455. Are you worried maybe about SNAP benefits, or maybe you're a farmer feeling the pressure as the Farm Bill has expired? What do you want to know about what's happening with the Farm Bill? We'll be talking about this for the next half hour or so. The number again, 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. All right, Steve, I painted the Farm Bill in really broad strokes in the setup for our conversation today. But for those of us who are not as finely attuned to the world of agriculture as you are, what sort of policy does the bill set more specifically?
Those are really good questions for deep dive experts like Jonathan Capes on the program today. But, you know, the Farm Bill is a farm bill. It is a food and nutrition bill, which it largely is by spending amount. The Farm Bill also takes in ideas and discussions, you know, about some aspects of rural development, other things that go on. And there's also this, I think, growing aspect of the Farm Bill that maybe John and Adam can touch on, which is, I think it's turning into a little bit of a environmental bill, and it's turning into an idea and a way for at least the current administration to work on overall environmental programs that were included in the Inflation Reduction Act. You could see them moved into the Farm Bill if there is one passed in December.
Oh, that's interesting. Let's come back to that idea of the environmental stuff being included. Adam, let me bring you into the conversation. What from your perspective are some of the biggest pieces of the Farm Bill as it pertains to Illinois and our agricultural industry?
Well, the biggest thing is crop insurance, making sure that the crop insurance title is reauthorized. Virtually every farmer purchases crop insurance, and it's a program that works very well. Farmers have quote-unquote skin in the game. They pay premiums and, you know, in the hopes that they won't have to collect anything after the growing season's over. So the crop insurance program works very well for us. You know, I don't expect to see a great amount of major change happening in this Farm Bill. I think some are revolutionary and some are evolutionary, and I suspect this will be evolutionary, and that probably would be good for all of us.
So, Jonathan Capes, I want to bring you into the conversation now. That's kind of the bigger picture. What are the sort of things that tend to get talked about when Congress comes back to this every 5 years or so?
Yeah, thanks, Brian. And I mean, Steve and Adam sort of hit the main points quite well. And I think what we tend to see are it's a big coalitional effort, right? The number of interests that are involved in the bill, everything as was mentioned, from food assistance to farm support, to conservation-based assistance, rural development, and so forth. And so you do get into a lot of those kind of coalitional negotiations and aspects. What we tend to see and have seen, particularly in recent history, is when it gets very partisan and when we see the very polarized kind of things come through, it usually focuses on budget and spending, how to cut spending. And of course, the Farm Bill spends roughly $100 to $120 billion a year, and about 80 to 85% of that is through the food assistance program that you mentioned, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. And so if we get really locked down in the budget fights, it gets very partisan and very difficult to maintain that coalition. To Adam's point and the other side of this, on the farm interest piece, right, we have a lot of regional conflicts or regional disagreements around, you know, which crops and what kind of assistance and how those things kind of play out in the more maybe smaller part of the coalition, the smaller coalitional component of this. And then Steve also raised the Inflation Reduction Act and some of the questions and issues around conservation, the environment, and climate change. And so that has been an increasing focus in the most recent debates.
Well, Jonathan, so we've been talking a lot on the program about that conservative faction of the Republican Party in the House and the effect they have been trying to have on legislation, particularly as it comes to budget legislation. There are some who want to separate the food assistance portion of the farm bill from the sort of more policy or agricultural aspects of the legislation. Can you talk about the history of why those two things got joined together and, you know, why that may be politically necessary to actually make this deal happen?
Sure. So there's a pretty good and long history to this. It really is also, I think, a very good example of how Congress works or how it's designed to work, which is this idea of building a coalition to get enough votes in two different chambers with two different types of representation in the House and the Senate and getting it through and onto the president's desk. So the whole design of Congress really requires that. And we saw throughout history with farm bills and farm policy, as it fractured, frankly, as amongst farm groups and farm interests, so particularly between the Midwest and the South in the 50s and 60s, they really fought it out over farm policy to the point of the first defeat for a farm bill on the House floor was 1962. 2 years later, the House of Representatives paired up a vote on farm policy with a vote on then the food stamp program of 1964. And that's the first kind of coalitional move we see on that. Food stamps and farm policy were brought together in 1973. So for 50 years now, we've been operating this broad coalition that spans from the farm to low-income households in rural America and into the cities and suburbs. And so that coalition has sort of been very functional and very strong in terms of getting votes and being able to get through Congress. But as you point out, these factional interests, particularly on the extreme edges of this, look for ways to tear it apart because they know that if you break apart the coalition, you then have a chance to really go after every individual piece of it. And so I would always point out that not having SNAP doesn't mean that's the only thing that those who oppose SNAP are after. They're after crop insurance, Title I conservation, and so forth. And so the coalition gives it strength, but it also is the kind of thing that you see factional efforts to take apart.
Steve Bridge, are you seeing a lot of appetite for this separation among the Illinois members of the congressional delegation?
Well, absolutely no appetite for it on the Democrat side. Largely no appetite for it on the Republican side. But as I was listening to your program yesterday, Brian, you were unable to, after request, to get Mike Bost or Darren LaHood on the program. Mm-hmm. I've tried to ask Mary Miller, Congresswoman Mary Miller, that question a lot on just her overall view and belief on separation of SNAP and nutrition programs from the Farm Bill. Often she doesn't take questions or won't answer that question directly, but largely Miller and others in the Republican side of things here in the Illinois House have voted for reduction of overall spending. They've asked for a reduction of overall spending, the missing upcoming farm funding discussion. So directly, maybe not directly standing for the complete separation of SNAP and the Farm Bill, but quietly seeing if it could happen and they would support it.
Interesting. And all three Republicans from Illinois did vote against the continuing resolution for what that is worth. You know, Steve, one of the things I've seen mentioned in the conversations about the Farm Bill is the state of the farm economy right now. There was an article from State's Newsroom that said relatively high crop prices have masked a tenuous economy for farmers. What are you seeing there?
You know, I will say most of the farmers I talk to are very pleased with the last couple of crop years. Prices have been high. Yields have been very good in our direct area. But this is a farm economy that is very broad in Illinois, north or south, east to west. And it's a nationwide economy as well. And so what I can really say is talking to people that farm large acreage of corn and soybeans, they've been pretty happy the last couple of years. Now, their input prices are up. Most of these farmers have never spent more money on crop and crop inputs. They've never spent more money on fertilizer. They have never spent more money on seed, other chemicals, diesel fuel, all of it that takes to raise a crop. But overall, the prices that they've received, as you've mentioned, have largely been pretty good. And there's been a good way to maximize revenue and to make a pretty good living the last couple of years.
So, Adam, what are you hearing from farmers about this next version of the Farm Bill? What sort of requests or asks are they wanting to see out of the Congress?
I don't think they're looking for monumental change. I think there's they're very happy with the way crop insurance works, and my guess is that there's not going to be a challenge to crop insurance. There hasn't been in the past, so I imagine that will be reauthorized. I think they're looking for, a safety net in a commodity program, assuming prices did go down, and we haven't seen that. But, it's their a commodity program that can address a drop in prices or, tough economic conditions. But I'd say generally they're happy with what what is currently in the Farm Bill. And my feeling is that the fewer changes, the better.
Let's go to the phones at 800-222-9455 as we are continuing to talk about the expiration of the Farm Bill this past weekend and the fact that Republicans and Democrats in Congress could be months away from negotiating a new version of that legislation. Again, 800-222-9455, and Max is calling from Clark County. Max, thanks for calling in.
Thank you for taking my call. I would say that the farmers ought to be happy with the Farm Bill, especially the federal taxpayer support they're getting to pay their crop insurance premiums. Republicans like to call the food stamp program and that side of the Farm Bill a socialist program. Well, the USDA crop insurance program is a socialist program, too. It's essentially welfare for farmers. Senator Durbin mentioned on WILL a couple of years ago that on average, the farmer pays 38% of crop insurance premiums. And it just bothers me that they attack the food stamp part of the program as being socialist welfare, and they never even mention the fact that they don't pay for 62% of their crop insurance premiums.
All right, Max, thank you for calling in and sharing your perspective with us. I appreciate that. Jonathan Kappas, do you want to respond to that or take on anything that he said there?
Well, he raises a tough question and one that I don't want to get lost in a lot of the details and complexities, but it is a part of this overall effort, right? We are assisting low-income people to purchase food. We are assisting farmers with one of the primary risks of farming, which is what the unknowns of weather once you put that crop in the ground, which is important, again, for our food system. And, Steve and Adam mentioned, even the Title I subsidies, which are also controversial and are constantly under attack as well. There's an argument there that as you run the risk of weather and markets and the sort of thin margins that are often associated with it, we have a couple good years of prices, but what does the next 2 or 3 years look like? And so I agree with the caller in the sense that attacking one component of this and claiming this one is the bad one isn't an effective or necessarily good or wise sort of way to go about this, because we are assisting broad parts of the economy and different factions or interest areas. And so I think we can get lost in that. Um, but you know, the crop insurance program, as Adam has mentioned, is an important mechanism that farmers manage that risk. And we want that risk managed for our food system.
Interesting. All right, we need to take a break here. I'm going to just mention we had another caller, Charles, who did not want to go on air, but said he's against food support because he feels it short circuits the overall economy. Removing that forces fair prices, and he feels prices are artificially low as it stands. We can talk about that and more when we come back. We are talking about the expiration of the Farm Bill. That happened over the weekend as the Congress was passing a continuing budget to sort of kick things down the road for 45 days, keep the federal government running. We're talking about all this with Jonathan Kappas, a professor at the University of Illinois, Steve Bridge, agribusiness director at a radio station in Springfield, and Adam Nielsen with the Illinois Farm Bureau. More to come after a short break. Stay with us.
The 21st is made possible in part by Busey. For 150 years, Busey has helped business owners and entrepreneurs navigate financial decisions, achieve long-term goals, and realize dreams of success. Busey, fulfilling dreams since 1868.
It's the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about the Federal Farm Bill, which sets policies and funding for food, farm, and conservation programs. And that includes items like SNAP, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, formerly known as food stamps. Congress passes a new Farm Bill about every 5 years, but the previous version just expired this past weekend, and there are still significant rifts between Democrats and Republicans on a new one. We're talking about all this with Jonathan Kappas, director of the Gardner Agriculture Policy Program at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champain, Steve Bridge, Agriculture Business Director for WFMB AM-FM in Springfield, and Adam Nielsen, Director of the National Legislation and Policy Development with the Illinois Farm Bureau. 800-222-9455. We'll be talking about this until a little bit past, half past the hour. Adam, let me come to you because I think you maybe wanted to respond to what we were talking about just before we went to the break, and that we had a caller who talked about comparing subsidies for crop insurance and food stamps and the language that gets used around that, and then we had another caller who was talking about fair prices. Take it where you will.
Well, yes, it is nice to be able to have part of your crop insurance premium paid for. We've done this calculation regarding food expenditures. 8 cents of every dollar spent on SNAP goes back to the farm gate, SNAP being the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program that millions of people use every day. I guess what I'm trying to say is that, you know, everything is very cyclical when it comes to farm programs. The money is, I think America gets a good bang for its buck. From the standpoint of nutrition, I think there are few countries that have a better food and nutrition program than the United States. So there's a price to be paid for that, and a lot of it comes out of the farmer's pocket.
Is it fair to say that SNAP, I mean, how would you say, does SNAP help create the market for American agriculture?
Contribute to the market. It in a way. I don't know if it creates the market for American agriculture.
That's probably overstating it.
It increases demand for food, right, which is good. We don't want to see anybody starve in this country. We're decades past that debate. And I think that we're, you know, happy to see that this program exists side by side with the farm program. And we want to keep those two components together. Whenever this farm bill comes up, some people want to pull them apart. And we've always insisted that they stay together.
Yeah. We got another call. Rob in Springfield was driving, didn't want to go on air. Thank you for that. Safe driving. But didn't want to ask about the combination of food security and crop insurance for farmers. How much of our corn and soybean crops are actually for food? And from that standpoint, Rob was wondering whether the food and farm aspects should be in the same piece of legislation. And maybe Jonathan Kappas, do you want to take that?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, obviously, corn goes into feeding livestock. We also use a good chunk of it for fuel anymore, for biofuels, ethanol in the fuel system. Soybeans, wheat, all of these have either direct or indirect food, go into food indirectly or directly. So I think it's difficult, and to build on what Adam said, it is difficult to just separate those out and to pretend that one doesn't need the other, or that they're not a part of this overall food system that we have. And again, to that point, there are over 40 million Americans who are getting assistance to buy food through the SNAP program. So it is an enormous program that does a lot of good and helps a lot of people put food on the table in households that would otherwise struggle with it. And so I think sometimes we lose focus on that very fundamental reality and some of the politics about splitting this apart and the spending on these programs.
Steve, you mentioned something near the beginning of our conversation, which is the idea that the Biden administration is particularly looking to advance some of its climate change, global warming related policies in this legislation. Can you talk more about that? And I'm sure you got the same press release that I did from Congresswoman Mary Miller, sort of boasting about many of the things that she voted for that, of course, ended up not going anywhere. Ultimately, last week, you know, reducing funding for certain offices in the USDA that helped, you know, that were meant to help farmers adapt to climate change. Take that where you will.
Yeah, so the Biden administration, through the Inflation Reduction Act, sent a lot of money to the countryside to work on climate smart farming, they call it, and other environmental programs, the continued adoption and more widespread use of, say, cover crops, the idea to get more energy efficient, either in, you know, our homes in Springfield or Champaign around the state, or in more rural areas, and other ways for farmers by the Biden administration's terms, probably become more green. I think that this farm bill, if the Biden administration had some input on it, and maybe through their Democratic congresspeople, they do, that the farm bill, if they had the majority, would include more climate smart programs and more climate smart money. But there's already funding for conservation inside the farm bill. And if the revenue and the money spend would grow, clearly, I think the Biden administration would be pleased if some of that money that grew the farm bill spending overall, maybe over $1 trillion over this farm bill spend over the next 5 years, if it ever passes, could be dedicated to conservation and climate smart programming for the farmer.
Adam, let me ask you about some of the things that are actually sort of on the ground. What changes now that the Farm Bill is no longer or expired this past weekend? And what are some of the mileposts you're looking for, you know, Dairy Cliff, things like that, in the months ahead if this continues to drag on and on?
Yeah, well, first of all, we're going to hope and pray that that doesn't happen and that we are successful in our lobbying efforts to get their attention and get something going. Assuming we're unsuccessful, the farm bill has been extended. The program still exists. There's no drop in support for either crop insurance or commodities or conservation. These programs just don't disappear on October 1st. So I think the expiration, we hope, will spur Congress to act. But if they don't act, we'll still have programs that they passed 5 years ago. And, they'll miss the opportunity to adjust them or change them in any way. Not a lot of worry. It's just you want them to focus on your farm bill, right? That's what they're supposed to do in Washington. So that I think would probably be more of a concern if the farm bill were somehow ignored. And I don't think it will be.
Jonathan Kappas, what about you? What would an ongoing rift or an extended rift on this mean for the people in our country? Not just the farmers, but I mean, all of us eat and buy food here.
Yeah, I think Adam made the point. It's unlikely that we hit the worst possible outcomes. And you mentioned the dairy cliff, that the potential that these existing programs would expire and we'd resort or revert to a much older and much more dysfunctional policy system. The likelihood for extensions, we have done this, you know, every 5 years for a while and have had to extend multiple times in those processes. So that's not unusual. Although I will say that the risk of it isn't zero. And with a Congress, particularly a House that we've talked about, that doesn't seem to want to just do basic things like fund the government, it does raise real concerns that you know, we hit these kind of roadblocks over and over. So there are some sort of, you know, very strange and antiquated policies that we could get stuck with, at least in the farm space. SNAP would likely continue. Conservation is going to continue. Crop insurance is going to continue. So it's really a narrow risk to a subset of policies. But this dysfunction in Congress is a reason to be more concerned maybe than we normally would about getting things moving through.
Jonathan Kappes is director of the Gardner Agricultural Policy Program at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Steve Bridge is Agriculture Business Director at WFMB AM and FM in Springfield. And Adam Nielsen is Director of National Legislation and Policy Development with the Illinois Farm Bureau. Thank you all so much for being with us today on the 21st Show.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brian.